Hello, I'm Jennifer. I'm an addict. Okay, I'll take a step back. Tell me when. There? Okay, good. The speaker's statement is, the NA member chosen to speak at a meeting needs to be someone who is working and living the NA program of recovery, which are the 12 steps and 12 traditions. In areas where there is not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and 12 traditions, there is the possibility that a group inexperienced with Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distances to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell excessively on our reactive addiction or war stories, because we all know what it's like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we are here to share our experience, strength, and hope of recovery. Did I say I'm Jennifer and I'm an addict? Okay. Yes, I'm nervous. I'm nervous because I'm going to tell the truth about myself to you and what I think. And you all know when I'm lying. You let me get away with it, but you know. And I know that you know. I haven't planned what I'm going to say. Blessedly, I've been way too busy to think. And my prayer is that I tell you the truth. Now, the thing is, here's the thing about the truth. If you look at this pamphlet, what do you see? Tell me what you see. Okay. I see white. Okay? People can see different sides of the truth. The truth is the truth. Whatever you see is for you. What I tell you today is going to be my truth today. It's just for today. With the experience that I have. And that's an ongoing discovery. If I say something that confuses you or offends you or that you disagree with, take it up with me. Don't take it up with the program. The program is, in my opinion, perfect just the way it is. I'm not. I'm human, and my imperfections, my defects, make me everything I am. And I'm real grateful for that today. Don't let what I say keep you out of a meeting. Chances are I won't be in that meeting. Right now I'm working real hard, and mostly at night. So my home group is online, because that's something I can do consistently. Those are people who are going to check on me. That was the first thing first truth I told today that I really didn't want to. You know, I'm running through my head. What can I write down? What the hell's the name of that group? Oh, tired, I'm going to swear, I'm sorry. But that is my home group. That's the group that I attend regularly. That's the group I depend on to be there for me. That's the group where I tell the truth. And that's what I'm doing right now. 3 weeks, that'll probably change, because my nights will free up, and then I'll do something else. I have to do whatever I can do for my recovery today, and it's an option. And frankly, through that group, in the last 10 years, I've met some incredible people who have saved my recovery more than once. And I'm real grateful for that. So, there, that's easier. Telling the truth about telling the truth, that's even harder. The topic is who's an addict. This is my favorite topic because this is really where my recovery began. I do H&I on a regular basis. Not because I'm all that spiritual, because it's the closest thing and easiest thing for me to do. They let me do it whenever I feel like it. And they fill in when I can't. And when I go to H&I or whenever I talk to anybody in recovery about recovery, what I try to let them know is that I understand who they are. My pile of drugs has nothing to do with your pile of drugs. My pile of drugs wasn't very big. I got clean on who's an addict. I got clean on the traditions. I knew that I belonged here, and nobody could tell me different. And over the years, that's only gotten more and more and more important to me. When people say things like, oh, we don't need to put books in libraries, addicts don't read, or nobody's paying attention, don't worry about breaking the traditions this one time, stuff like that, I take exception, because when I got clean, I was a graduate student, and I found NA in a library, because I was trying to figure out why my life was going to hell, and couldn't have been the drugs, there weren't that many. Didn't do it that often. You know, look, all the excuses. And that's how I got here. Now, I didn't identify in right away because of the pile of drugs. But the way I identified in eventually was because of who's an addict. Because in the basic text, and that's all we had when I got clean, in the basic text it talks about who we are. How we feel, how we approach the world. And I identified with that. The fact that the only thing that really annoys me about other people is when they're not responding to me the way I want them to and doing what I want them to do. And the thing that really attracted me to people in my past life was if they would do what I wanted them to do and make me feel the way I wanted to feel. And so And so, I gave this a shot. I really didn't want to get clean. At the time, it was real hard to qualify for, well, it was hard for me, to qualify for treatment. And I could have gotten a scholarship, but I was way too okay for that, and I needed to get a job. I couldn't go to treatment for a month. And, and every excuse you've heard over and over from all those people that usually are coming back through treatment, I can't believe I made it. Everything I did was not the right way to do it, and I'm still here. Now, that's another thing about who addicts are. There's no way that you can pick out the ones who are going to stay clean. There's absolutely no way. All bets were off. I can't believe I stayed clean. I don't recommend anybody do what I did. My sponsee, I was talking to somebody a couple weeks ago, and she was saying, but you mean that I don't need to do all this stuff you wrote down that I was supposed to do? I can just go ahead? And I said, are you kidding me? I want it to be easier for you. I don't want you to go through what shit I went through. I want you to get this right away. You know? Take it. Whatever I can give you, take it. I'm not going to hold up hoops. People held up hoops that I couldn't jump through. And I'm real grateful that I didn't have to stay here. The most important thing to me, and I believe the biggest difference between this program and any others, is the word that starts all our steps, except for the 12, we. Those two little letters, because I could not do this by myself. I tried. I did what I could, couldn't keep a sponsor. They kept referring me to therapy for some reason, and I kept refusing to go. Well, actually, I did go, and the therapist kept telling me I was doing more than most people, so, you know, go back and do whatever you're doing. So I'd go around at the barn another time. But the bottom line is this. What I've learned here is that it takes all kinds. The way you saw two sides to that pamphlet I held up, truth has as many sides as we have people to look at it. Recovery has as many faces as we have. And I love that. I love that the face looking at me in the mirror is not the face I had when I got clean. I like the face I have now. That girl that got clean, she's real cute. Couldn't stand to look at her. And today I like my belly. And I like my fat ass. Not as fat. Found out yesterday. Anyway. I forgot some. Before I go any further, I do this because of the way. I appreciate that they asked me to speak. I'm honored to do it. It's a debt I owe. It's a debt of my life that I owe to this fellowship to respond and do whatever service I can. Like I said, I am selfish about it. I won't say no, but I will choose what I do do. Because I tend to do better what I like, but I will do things I don't want to do if I'm asked. I owe that debt because of the way. The people who were my home group, who taught me all about this fellowship, the people who drove hundreds of miles, the people who I called long distance and stayed on the phone with me for hours and explained this fellowship to me, the people who sat up with me till 3, 4 in the morning because they knew I was going to hurt myself or somebody else. Or maybe not this time, but I would eventually. They knew me. The people who loved me because of who I am, not in spite of who I am. Because they could identify with what I would verbalize. I owe those people my life. Every bit of the life I have now. The fact that I even value life. I was clean a long time before I got that suicidal was a bad idea. I thought it was, you know, an interesting option. You know, why are people upset that they were suicidal? I wasn't suicidal, but, oh yeah, I was, right? Denial's a really wicked bad thing. And, can you tell I was raised in the 70s? Okay. I owe those people, and that's why I do this, and that's what the we is for me. And that's why I can get away with not going to face-to-face meetings. Because I did 10, 15 times a week for years. And I knew those people, and I could call them at 3 in the morning, and they came. Or they could call me, and I went. And those people are still there. Those people, when a few years ago, just after 9/11, and my father died, and I was in more pain than I've ever been in my life, I called somebody at 3 in the morning, and I don't know what I was talking about. I was just sharing. And my friend said to me that he didn't know what he could do, but if I wanted him to, he would come and just hold my hand. And I was in Manassas, Virginia, and he's in Atlanta. And he would have done it. And that's the we. That's what keeps me alive. That's what protects me. That's what I have to go to. Let me tell you a story about the day I almost relapsed. The closest I've ever come to relapse, and this is a story I tell people in treatment, so they understand that how they feel is not unusual. When I had about 3 years clean, I went to a convention in Kentucky. And in Kentucky, first of all, they talk funny, so I was trying to be polite and not laugh. And pardon me, I'm a Yankee, I'm sorry. But I was really trying to be nice. Ended up going to this in southwestern Kentucky, went to a little convention, like 350 people. And we got there early. We got there on Wednesday, flew all night, went to meetings Thursday and Friday. In Kentucky, at the end of every single meeting, even if it's this big, Every single person hugs every other person, looks them in the eye, hugs them hard, heart to heart, grabs them up, looks them in the eye, and says, I love you. And then the next one, I love you. Okay? 3 days of that, and I was like, who the hell are you people? You don't know me. I don't want you, right? But I couldn't say it. I was so scared. I thought I belonged here, and I didn't feel like, I couldn't feel what they were doing. Couldn't. So I talked to the friends I went with. And they said, well, and see, they were guys, okay? I told you, nothing I did was right. It's okay. One of them was gay. That was scarier to them than I was. Anyway. And they said, get with the women. I went to the women. The women said, well, just don't feel that way. I went back to my friends. They said, come on. Well, what'd they say? Well, just don't feel that way. Come on. It's okay. It was not okay. By the grace of God, the Saturday night speaker had a full plate. And I know this after the fact. Before he spoke, he had to take his plate out so he didn't talk like this the whole time. He had to figure out a way to get us all to close our eyes. So he said, close your eyes for a moment and think of that time when you were alone. And here's a miracle. Think of that time when you were so alone, when you felt so beat up, where you couldn't get in touch with anybody, where you knew you didn't belong, where, you know, and he said all this stuff. And he talked about his pain. All this over trying not to, you know, his ego, right? Trying not to lisp and tell us he had a full plate. And he saved my life because he understood my pain. And I found out that even though I look like an elementary school teacher, which I'm not, I'm a college English teacher, inside I look a lot more like big, mean MFers who ran gangs, that I had the same pain, that I had the same, I don't know, there's all kinds of psychological terms, and that's why I don't deal with people in therapy. I'm afraid they'll put me away. And I hurt. And he helped me. We shared. And I went home, and I talked to my home group, and one of my friends said, this is what I've been trying to tell you. This is called intimacy. This is fellowship. Here's what we're going to do. Now you understand, you're going to go explain to somebody else. And you're going to bring them back, and we're going to sit down, and we're going to see what happens. And what happened is everything since. People's lives were saved and changed. People grew. We loved each other. We fought like brothers and sisters. Mean, right? Why do you think I was up at 3 in the morning ready to hurt somebody? Because I was fighting with these people. They were fighting with me, something. And the thing is today, I don't have that. I don't mean that I don't have that closeness. I don't have the struggle. I don't have that battle in my head that I have to try to be somebody I'm not because I can't show you who I am. Today I can show you who I am because if you don't like me, somebody else will. There's lots of people in the world. I don't really care. There are people backing me more all the time. You know, I'm real comfortable with who I am, and that's what recovery has brought me. All the time? No. One of those same friends, a few years ago, I was talking about my relationship. And I was saying that I was real proud of it because relationships are tough. Not real good at this relationship, but it's working still. And it's more than working. It's wonderful. It's a sweet little thing. And God love him. Because, you know, as annoying as he is, he has to live with me. I can hardly do that. So, and I said I was real proud of the fact that I had been able to do this. And my friend said, you know, I'm real proud of you too, because I remember when you felt like you were unlovable, like nobody would ever love you. And I started laughing and said, yeah, I remember that too. It was last Tuesday. You know, I have those days. I had one of those days Wednesday. You know, I'm doing everything wrong. No one will ever understand. No one likes me. And life sucks. And then I just stop. Hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. Really just stop. You know, take care of yourself and get back to it when you're ready. Addicts are people who are very sensitive, very intelligent, the best actors on earth. We could not have gotten away with all that. You wouldn't be sitting here. You'd be locked up somewhere. So would I. But with this face, I got away with so much. Anyway, I'm really grateful to be here. I'm really grateful for a lot. I used to hate people who sat in meetings and talked about gratitude. Who are they kidding? I used to watch people walking down the street holding hands and wonder who was conning who. Who was getting over on who. I had no idea. And today, those people, you know, the reason these guys took care of me, because they did, taught me everything I know about life. The reason they did is because I taught them how to show love, because it was so new to me. 32 years old before I realized what it meant. Okay, I had no clue. And I show them how to express it, and they count on me to do it for them. And I count on them to understand that even though I'm 5'3", I will beat the shit out of you somehow. I will hurt you. You know what I'm saying? I do H&I not because I've been there, but because I could be there in a heartbeat. You know, I talk to newcomers not because I have anything they don't have. It's because I could be there in a heartbeat. Thank God it's a heartbeat. I have a moment to make a decision. I tell newcomers always that I have experience, strength, and hope. My experience is just like theirs. I hurt, I feel, it comes and goes. A lot of it is healed and gone away. I have this selective memory. I forget that it took me like 14 years. I'm slightly exaggerating, but it took me a long time to do my steps and whatever. And I have the same experience. I hurt like they hurt. I'm just as confused as they are. Because, see, recovery is an active change of actions, attitudes, and ideas. If I don't have problems, I'm not recovering because I'm not trying to grow. I can't do the same old thing over and over and over and over. That's not recovery. Recovery is an active change of actions, attitudes, and ideas. So I have the same confusion and pain and problems. But what I have is strength, and the strength is based on the we. Those people back me, and I back them. Some of the faces have changed, but there's still a we. They're always there when I need them. They're a lot when I don't. And they've shared their lives with me. A lot of people have shared their lives with me. And the hope is this. If somebody is smart and is innocent looking and as good a con as I am, can live through the shit I went through, going up against guys 2-3 times my size and not getting hurt, and that's in recovery, okay? I'm not kidding. If you can do, I mean, anybody can do this. Anybody. And if anybody tells you different, come talk to me and we'll find somebody else for you to talk to. Because we can do this together. I'm so glad this is over. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Jennifer. I'd like to introduce our second speaker from the Bottom of the Mountain meeting in Round Hill, Virginia. I'd like to introduce Mike B.
I'm Mike. I'm an addict. I know Dan real well. We kayak together. And, you know, if I sound funny, I'm from Kentucky. Would you close your eyes a minute? She's not kidding. And, no, I'm really from southern Ohio, where I was raised on the Kentucky and West Virginia border in that area. And I'm going to read this. I don't want to. It's a good thing I got a lot of time, because I hate being told what to do, you know. God, I hate being told what to do. And I know a lot, you know. Us addicts know a lot. And I don't take no shit off anybody, you know. But I'm going to give in here. The NA member chosen to speak at a meeting needs to be someone who is working and living the NA program of recovery. Hey, yes. Which are the 12 steps and 12 traditions, and that is true. In areas where there is not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time and are experienced with the 12 steps and 12 tradition, there is the possibility that a group of inexperienced and Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. Well, when we started NA in my area, that's true. There wasn't anybody else around. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text for it, we didn't have it. We had a little white book. Reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distances, let's hope they do, to support new groups. It's a pleasure and an honor when we can do that, that's for sure. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be very careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is, in other words, I know everything. It is not necessary to dwell excessively in our active addiction or war stories because we all know what it was like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we are here to share our experience, strength, and hope of recovery. That's what I'm up here for, and I want to briefly tell you a little bit about myself. I'm 62 years old, and I came in at 31, and I've been clean and active in Narcotics Anonymous since the day I came in, and I love this program. I love the 12 steps, and I think it's the greatest spiritual principles given to human beings, if you live them, you know, and it's a job. When they asked me to do who is an addict, I thought, well, I'd rather do step 10, 11, and 12. And the more I thought about this, I think I'm pretty qualified to know who an addict is, and let me tell you why. No, I married and divorced two in recovery. I've got four children. They're all addicts. And I've been one for 31 years that I've known about it. And a lot longer than that before I knew about it. It's an amazing thing, the denial that we have in this process, how we go on. And I know I'm here by the grace of God in Narcotics Anonymous. I know that. I don't even think that or wonder it. I know that. I've had 31 plus years that I shouldn't have had. I came in the day before I died. And I think it works best that way. If not, you're going to have to suffer a lot anyway, you know, after you get here, because you know everything and you don't take no shit off nobody. And, you know, you're going to do what you want to do. And I have a lot of addicts in around me. I mean, it is my life. This is my tribe. Okay? Y'all, my people. And I understand how screwed up you are and how you think, you know? I know. I sponsor 9 men actively and 4 women. And it's a family thing. I mean, we know everything about everybody. There ain't no damn secrets. I'm going to find your secrets out and tell everybody. Screw you, you know? and it's going to kill you. And that's really true. But that's what an addict is. They like secrets. Keep that crap in your mind and let it wheel around there, you know. But I'll tell you, I can describe my son probably, who I love dearly, my baby boy. He's in prison out in California because they didn't catch him once for drugs, or twice, or three times, seven times. They sent him to a treatment center on the sixth time, and he writes me. Now, this is pretty good. He writes me, "Oh, this is so nice to be out of jail in this treatment center. These people are so nice." 2 weeks later, "You know, these people are assholes." Letter comes in. A month later, "I can't stand these damn people. They are animals." And he walks, you know, and he leaves California. He travels the country, goes to jail here and there, you know, and for always the same thing, possession in public. Yeah, little joint, you know. He really believes, and I understand this, he believes in his heart that weed is a natural herb and that everybody should be able to smoke it any place they want. And he believes that, like I did for so many years, you know. And now, this young man, he decides to go to sleep on the beach down in Key West. And they pick him up, and he's got a little weed on him. He says, "Well, I have a right to sleep on the beach." Well, they said, "Well, we've got a place for you to sleep, you know." And they let him out after a week. And he called me, said, "Dad, I got out." He calls me the next night. He went back down to the beach with weed on him. And got caught again. Now, you think that's addict behavior? So he travels around. He ends up back in California and gets caught jaywalking. And they lock him up for 2 years in prison. And this time he goes before the judge. And the judge says, "Son, I thought I sent you to a treatment center. What happened?" He said, "Well, I walked off." "Well, this time I'm sending you to prison for a couple years." You know, that's where he's at. But, you know, it's amazing. I remember when he was 15 years old, and I camped with this boy. He only knew me clean. And kayaked with him, did everything with him. But once he took his first drug, I'll never forget, it changed his life like it did mine. It just set him off on, you know, a tangent. And he when he was 15, he spent a year in jail for some stuff that teenagers do when they use drugs. And he... I'll never forget, he got the before the judge, and the judge says, "I'm going to let you out, but, you know, what are you going to do?" And he says, "Well, I'm going to stay clean. You know, I believe in God now. I'll do anything to get out of here. I'll try real hard, you know." And they let him out, and I watched him, you know, and about 2 weeks later, attitude changes first, right? One thing leads to another, and after about 90 days, he's using it again. I said, "Well, the judge is going to tell you." He says, I got to have it, you know. "I'd rather have this for one day and go to jail for 2 years. I got to have it." Now, is that addict behavior? You know, who's an addict? You know, that's us. It doesn't matter the consequences. And, you know, when we come in here and we get clean, it doesn't matter the consequences. You know, I work with a lot of new people, and there's a young gal that it's so funny. She didn't have a place to stay, and she just celebrated a year. I gave her, let her stay in a bedroom. The place was too peaceful and nice for her. She likes chaos in her life, you know. And she's going out here running things her way, and she's out running things her way, and suddenly I get a call. "I need a place to stay again." Suddenly, like right then. Now, is that an addict? Yeah. You know, that's an addict with a year, you know. And, well, go on over. I don't keep my house locked, you know. It's open for anybody who wants to come. I don't have anything materially that means that much to me. And so, you know, go on over and stay, you know. And I sponsored some people that are here tonight. I sponsored one guy for 24 years since I moved over here from Ohio. And they're the same way. You can stay in their house if you need a place to stay, another attic. That's what it's all about. We're family. We love each other. And, you know, that's what I had missed in all my using. And what I wanted was to feel good and feel love. And I never found it till I found Narcotics Anonymous. I really did. And this is my tribe. These are the people I love. You all my people, you know. And you understand me, I guess, is what it is, you know. I had to, yesterday and the day before, my company wanted me dressed in a suit and tie. And they did a filming of me on film, you know. And I had to, they're going to show this as a PR thing. And I can't remember what I'm supposed to say. You know, I get up in front of film, I'm a nervous wreck. I get up in front of you people, I've been around long. I'm not a nervous wreck, I love y'all. You know, I'll get up here and tell the truth just how I know it, you know. And when you've been clean as long as I have, you know, you only know the truth. Because I've tried to fool myself too many times, and I only work out of pain, you know. And I've suffered a lot, and I found out if I do the right things, damn, I can feel good all the time, you know. And but I really believe the three things that, that addicts have, I had, I remember as a kid, is, my God, don't tell me what to do. God, I hate being told what to do. And I still hate it. You know, if somebody gets up and preaches, man, quit your damn talk and go live it. Shut your damn mouth up, you know. I hate being told what to do. And the other thing is, I know a lot. I know everything, you know. Thank God I got struck stupid when I had about 20 years, you know. Thank God. I don't know much today. And what a relief. Not having to have all the answers, you know. Not wanting all the answers. Not needing the answers. Really not giving a damn about the answers because they don't mean shit. I don't know why we worry about all this stuff we can't control, you know. But we do. Our mind goes at like a million miles an hour about shit that's never going to happen. But you're going to live in it for a while, you know? You're going to live in it. You're going to say all this shit, this conversation you're going to have, and you're going to go up to somebody, and they're going to say hi, and you're going to forget everything you had in your head for 3 days. Now, is that an addict?
Yes.
Okay. That's me anyway. And, you know, I've worked these steps over and over at a different level. And that's what I try to do with the people I sponsor today is we try to work the steps. I had a, in January, we had a, at the house, invited people over to have a fourth and fifth step workshop at my house, you know, cook out for them. And, you know, I enjoy that stuff. You know, it's my family. And it's really my family. It really is. And the next month, I had six people come take a fifth step. It's wonderful. You know, because if we don't share this crap that's in us, we're going to die. And that's the start, you know. And then last 2 weeks ago, we had an eighth and ninth step workshop at one of the gals who's got a year that I sponsor, has a big old nice house on the river over there in the Shenandoah. We had an eighth and ninth step workshop. And I love having these things, you know. I love working. We just share and talk and learn how to work the steps. Because the steps are the program of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, we have a lot of fun at these conventions, and we love each other, and we have fun. But the truth is, it's when we leave here, and we go back to work, and we're all alone, that the addiction takes place. You know, the voice that talks to us over here, and for some of us, a lot of voices, you know. I had a bunch of voices when I came in, you know. And these guys that were around knew what I had in me. And what they did is they guided me and really showed me what to do by their example. They said, we got this meeting out here at this here penitentiary, and we believe you're the man to run it. Come on out. And so for 7 years, I ran the meeting at Ohio State Penitentiary where I got clean in Ohio. And they said, you do such a good job after a little while that we got another penitentiary down here. We think you're the man to run it. And so down at the federal penitentiary in Ashland, Kentucky, I went down there doing that meeting. And then they said, well, we even have another meeting up here at CCI, Chillicothe Correctional Institution. You're the man to run that meeting. So I'm running three prison meetings. It's the best thing ever happened to me. And I remember going in there, and I used to go in. 100 guys would come into the meeting because we had coffee. And God, I loved working with those guys, you know. And I'd open my house up to them if they want to get out. And I used to say, here's my number. Call me when you get out. And not one of them ever called me. Damn con men. You know, they all promised. Not one of them. And it's funny how they believe in God and love the program when they're in prison. But boy, when they get out, they like to get screwed up quick, you know. And but I used to ask him, I said, well, how many of you guys in here think you got a problem with addiction? And out of 100 guys, about 4 hands would go up. Because addiction wasn't known back in 1975 very much, you know. And we know that 90% of those guys, 80 to 90% of them in prison, of the men and women that are there, are addicts. And so us that are out here are very fortunate. We got to carry that message to them. And when they get out, we got to love them and help them. Because most of us are, you know. And the world's a little different today. I was a slimy son of a gun. I got away with a lot of crap. And I remember I told my story. They asked me to speak at the anniversary at the federal penitentiary when I had 3 years. And I got up and told my story. And this guy got up, the guy chairing it, who's serving life in prison, said, you're the sickest man I've ever heard. So I'm a slimy guy, you know. When I had 25 years clean, I got rid of most everything. I had a great reputation, was helping people, and I cheated on my wife that I loved. And I lied about it. So I'm a slimy individual, you know. We don't get well overnight, but you know what? I learned out of that one. The pain was tremendous. In the last 6 years, the little girls can come to me and they're safe, you know, because, you know, I have no excuses anymore. And I'm blessed. But man, it takes a lot of pain to change me. I got to really hurt. And I get on my knees and cry every night, maybe for a year and a half like I did, and work the 10th step and not look at anybody else, but change me. And when I change me and I go back, there was, for example, there's a woman out there that I couldn't stand out in Virginia. She didn't believe in God, and I didn't like her. I came over here in Ocean City and lived a year and a half and worked on myself. Forgot about everybody else, worked on myself, went back. And you know, she'd gotten better. I love that woman today. She's really nice, says a lot of good things. Unbelievable. I can't believe she changed that much in a year and a half, you know. But I love being here. I think I was at the first one. You know, what trouble with being in here a long time and Narcotics Anonymous and clean a long time, I forget all the things. You know, I'm getting old. I forget all. Did I come to all 20 of these? I don't know, but I think I did. You know, I know I was at the first one. And, you know, it's so wonderful that we're here to share our love and our goodness with one another. And these conventions are wonderful, but what's really important is when we leave here and we go back home, that we share it with the new people in our home group and the people that we can share it and who come in and don't know they're an addict. And we're here to share our stories and our experience with them so that they can find out if they're an addict and hopefully they can be honest with themselves. Because a lot of people never make it. We just buried a few weeks ago a woman I love from a friend of mine who's got 11 years. And she got it for a year and then for 10 years she couldn't get it. And I love this lady. And she didn't make it, you know. And a lot of friends don't make it. A lot of the guys I sponsored are gone. Hard, and I can count on both hands double how many guys we tried to help and gals and love, and they aren't here. But I'm here, and you're here. So we got work to do, you know, to carry that message to the addict who still suffers. And, you know, the more I help other people, the better I feel. Even if my mind tells me not to. It's an amazing thing how it works. But I think I've covered, you know, what I think is who is an addict pretty well. I know I made every single mistake my first year that you can make, except I didn't use. And if they had told me not to get in a relationship, I would have done it just to spite them. If they told me not to get a job, that I couldn't handle. I'd do it just to spite them. See, because I did those things, and they were right, and it pissed me off. I had one relationship last 17 years in a marriage, and after 10 years, we had a wonderful time together, and she decided to use again. That can happen. Boy, that's tough. That's a hard thing. And when she came back, she never quite got it again. And I love her dearly, Dan. I'd reach out with my hand to help her if she ever wanted it again. But, you know, she's moved on. And, you know, this is the problem with we're an addict and we're in a relationship, especially when we're new. Because the chances are one of the two of you are going to get screwed up. I can just about bet you about 99% of the time that happens. So, of course, you're going to say if you're an addict, I'm the 1%. Because that's what I said. But we live and we learn. And I wanted to share a few things with you. You know, one of the things I do today, oh, by the way, we do a whitewater rafting trip every year. And if you guys want to have fun, you come along. It's the Dulles area. And we have a blast on it. Dan Belong, and there's a lot of people here that come along. And we have a wonderful time, have campfire meetings. You got to have fun, man. Why'd you use drugs for? You want to feel good, so you got to feel good when you get clean. And that's one of the things I try to get back and I love to do. And we camp and kayak. Some of the boys I sponsored last year, they want to see me in the summer, and they got to buy kayaks because I go into the mountains, have fun. So I have my little groupie friends now that come along. You know, we all have fun and go out in the mountains, camp, and have fun. It's wonderful. We need to do those kind of things. You know, get in and follow your dreams and do the things you want to do and enjoy life. That's what we do when we get clean, you know. It keeps me out of my head to do things that I want to do, you know. If they're good, honest, open things that are good for you, like healthy and good eating and those kind of things, you're going to feel better. That's just a natural law. But I've got a few readings I brought before I end this, and it's really good to be here. God, I love Narcotics Anonymous and you people, you know. And it's so great we meet so many people we don't know, and I see people here I see once a year, you know. And we're really blessed because once you realize you are an addict and you come here and you can't find what you want, man, you're really hurting. But if you find what you want and you keep it, you can have the best life on earth. I really believe that. I've seen it in too many people. I do a yoga meditation every morning, do my yoga so I feel good. I'm getting old and I can't pump iron like I used to, so I stretch, you know. And I feel good. I breathe and I feel good, you know, for 60. I'll be 63. And I'm out running with the youngins, you know. I love it. I love it. And a lot of that is because I've learned to take care of myself in the program of Narcotics Anonymous, you know, to eat right, to exercise, get my sleep, and balance my life out a little bit. And one of the sayings here that I love, it says, "In stillness lies the sound, which is the created existence of our higher power, or God. Whoever masters the stillness and the silence can understand it, receives all knowledge." I consider that the 11th step. Out of just for today, we can never fully recover no matter how long we stay clean. 25 years, as a cheat and a liar. You know, the pain came, and the pain was tremendous, and it changed my life. Another surrender. You know, so no matter what your defect of character is, if you can surrender it and be honest about it and bring it out in the light, you can change your life. It says right here, "I am an addict every day, but today I have the choice to be a recovering addict. I will make that choice by practicing my program." I believe that because if I practice my program and I meditate every day and I ask to get out of my own head and I ask God to get me to help somebody else in my life, by God, they're there, you know, they're there. And it's a blessing that they're in my life, you know. When I can reach out and touch another addict, they think, well, you're helping me. No, you're helping me. I don't know what it is. I'll never understand that totally, but I know that when that one addict helps another addict, magic happens. And it doesn't happen at work, okay? I'm in the construction field, oversee 100 guys or more every day, and you know, you can't be real honest. It's not a good place to tell a bunch of addicts that are using that your feelings are hurt by what they did and said, you know. So you have to use common sense on where you use this stuff. I have one other reading I really believe in. I believe each and every one of us, people don't come to me today if they're a victim, because I don't allow it. I set certain boundaries for everybody, and if you're a victim, you're screwed, because you're your own victim. You choose to have that. And you know, I believe you're captain of the ship, and there ain't nobody going to save your soul. And there's only two things that matter in the end, and that's love and forgiveness. And you're the only one that can master that. Keep your hands firmly upon the helm of thought. Our disease is in our thought. Don't forget that, always. In the bark of your soul reclines the commanding master. He does but sleep. Wake him up. Self-control is strength. Right thought is mastery. Calmness is power. Say unto your heart, peace be still. And you know, that is so important in my program today, you know, is that I can learn to be still and look at me and love myself. And that's what it's all about. That's what this program's all about, is to grow in that and grow in spirit, grow in love, grow in our willingness to help other people. When I was new, they taught me. What I didn't tell you is also, the mental hospital wanted a meeting. And I had a year in, and the guy said, you're the one to run that meeting. And I remember going up, and every Thursday night for a year running that meeting, and I went to my sponsor when I had a couple of years and said, you know, I've worked that meeting with my heart and my soul for a year, and not one of them are clean. He says, you are. And that's how it works. That's the program of Narcotics Anonymous. One other thing. I love this one. It's out of our textbook. You know, they tell us we only have one promise. That's bull crap. Read the textbook. There's a bunch of promises in there. I promise you. Here's one of them. As a result of this step, step 8, we receive a new freedom that can end isolation. As we realize our need to be forgiven, we tend to be more forgiving. That's a promise. Step 9. It is often necessary to take guidance from others in these matters. Isn't that funny? We might have to listen to somebody else beside our own self. That's interesting. Part of our learning how to live successfully is learning when we need help. Now, addicts don't like to ask for help. So that's why it's so important that we join each other and we join our circle of friends. We get it, they call it a network today. I don't know if I like that or not. I got a network, you know. I've got friends, and I've got a sponsor. My sponsor has half my time, but he's got a hell of a spiritual program, and I can share everything, so I don't have any secrets today. But what's so funny is when you start practicing these principles and these 12 steps in your life, and you open up your life, I can share with all my sponsees. I can share with anybody. They can put it in the paper, because I don't give a damn. That's right. I don't have any secrets today. And it took a long time for me to get there. And it's going to take you a long time. Unless you're one of those people that's just too smart for Narcotics Anonymous. I've met a lot of people that are too smart for NA, but you never meet anybody too damn dumb for it, do you? But it's good to be here. Is it about time? The end? I'm glad to have the opportunity. It's always an honor and a privilege to be at a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, share, you know. I really believe that the real work that we do in service work is in our home group. I believe that in my heart, that some of the people running here, this, and they put an awful lot of work into it, believe me, because I've done these things before too, a long time ago. 27 years ago, as a matter of fact, and I said I'd never do it again to have it. And I know God, there's a lot of work that's gone in to run this convention. I sponsor two or three of the people that are, you know, involved in the top part of it, and haven't been able to spend much time, and they call me. They're going crazy, you know. But you made a commitment. Keep it. And then, thank God, you don't have to do it again. But the people you sponsor, you want them to, you know. I find out the day I still go to a detox meeting. It's one of the meetings I go to, and I love it. Because I can have the worst day, and you walk in a detox meeting, them people hurting, baby, you know. So we got to work with new addicts all the time. And that's the key to happiness. If you want to be happy and you want to be free, you always have to be, I do, at least I do, I have to always work with new people. Be willing. Get my phone number out. Spend my time with them. Open up my house. You know, I get tired of people talking about this crap. You got to live it if you want to feel good, you know. Anyway, that's it. That's what I think who an addict is. I know I am. You know, we don't have to think twice about this, right? That's what it tells us. We know, and you know. And our job is to go out and convince other people who are dying of this disease that they might be an addict if we can, if they come to us. Love you all. Thank you.